Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 1. Bacteria. Part 1. Classifying prokaryotes. Until fairly recently, all prokaryotes were placed in a single kingdom, Monera. More recently, however, biologists have begun to appreciate that prokaryotes can be divided into two very different groups, the eubacteria and the archaebacteria. Each group is now considered to be a separate kingdom. Some biologists think that the split between these two groups is so ancient and so fundamental that they should be called domains, a level of classification even higher than kingdom. Eubacteria. The larger of the two kingdoms of prokaryotes is the eubacteria. Eubacteria include a wide range of organisms with different lifestyles. The variety is so great, in fact, that biologists do not agree on exactly how many phyla are needed to classify this group. Eubacteria live almost everywhere. They live in fresh water, salt water, on land, and on and within the human body. Figure 19-2 shows a diagram of Escherichia coli, a typical eubacterium that lives in human intestines. Eubacteria are usually surrounded by a cell wall that protects the cell from injury and determines its shape. The cell walls of eubacteria contain peptidoglycan, a carbohydrate. Inside the cell wall is a cell membrane that surrounds the cytoplasm. Some eubacteria have a second membrane outside the cell membrane that makes them especially resistant to damage. Archaebacteria. Under a microscope, archaebacteria look very similar to eubacteria. They are equally small, lack nuclei, have cell walls, but chemically, archaebacteria are quite different. Archaebacteria lack the peptidoglycan of eubacteria and also have different membrane lipids. Also, the DNA sequences of key archaebacterial genes are more like those of eukaryotes than those of eubacteria. Based on this and other data, scientists reason that archaebacteria may be the ancestors of eukaryotes. Many archaebacteria live in extremely harsh environments. One group of archaebacteria is the methanogens, prokaryotes that produce methane gas. Methanogens live in oxygen-free environments, such as thick mud and the digestive tracts of animals. Other archaebacteria live in extremely salty environments, such as Utah's Great Salt Lake, or in hot springs, where temperatures approach the boiling point of water. Checkpoint. Where do archaebacteria live? Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 1. Bacteria. Part 2. Identifying prokaryotes. Because prokaryotes are so small, it may seem difficult to tell one type of prokaryote from another. Prokaryotes are identified by characteristics such as shape, the chemical nature of their cell walls, the way they move, and the way they obtain energy. Shapes. Look at the different shapes of the prokaryotes shown below. Rod-shaped prokaryotes are called bacilli, singular bacillus. Spherical prokaryotes are called cocci, singular coccus. Spiral and corkscrew-shaped prokaryotes are called spirilla, singular spirillum. Cell walls. Two different types of cell walls are found in eubacteria. A method called Gram staining is used to tell them apart. The Gram stain consists of two dyes, one violet, the primary stain, and the other red, the counter stain. The violet stain, applied first, stains peptidoglycan cell walls. This is followed by an alcohol treatment that tends to wash out the stain. Gram-positive bacteria have thick peptidoglycan walls that retain the dark color of the violet stain even after the alcohol wash. Gram-negative bacteria have much thinner walls inside an outer lipid layer. Alcohol dissolves the lipid and removes the dye from the walls of these bacteria. The counterstain then makes these bacteria appear pink or light red. Movement. You can also identify prokaryotes by whether they move and how they move. Some prokaryotes do not move at all. Others are propelled by flagella, whip-like structures used for movement. Other prokaryotes lash, snake, or spiral forward. Still others glide slowly along a layer of slime-like material they secrete. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 1. Bacteria. Part 3. Metabolic Diversity. No characteristic of prokaryotes illustrates their diversity better than the ways in which they obtain energy. Depending on their source of energy and whether or not they use oxygen for cellular respiration, prokaryotes can be divided into two main groups. Most prokaryotes are heterotrophs, meaning that they get their energy by consuming organic molecules made by other organisms. Other prokaryotes are autotrophs and make their own food from inorganic molecules. Heterotrophs. Most heterotrophic prokaryotes must take in organic molecules for both energy and a supply of carbon. These prokaryotes are called chemoheterotrophs. We are chemoheterotrophs ourselves. Therefore, many prokaryotes compete directly with us for food. If human food is not handled carefully, bacteria like Staphylococcus aureus may get to the dinner table before you do. Once there, these bacteria may not only eat some of the food ahead of time, but may also release toxins that cause food poisoning. A smaller group of heterotrophic prokaryotes are called photoheterotrophs. These organisms are photosynthetic, using sunlight for energy, but they also need to take in organic compounds as a carbon source. Autotrophs. Other groups of prokaryotes are autotrophs. Some autotrophs, the photoautotrophs, use light energy to convert carbon dioxide and water to carbon compounds and oxygen in a process similar to that used by green plants. As you might expect, these organisms are found where light is plentiful, such as near the surfaces of lakes, streams, and oceans. One group, the cyanobacteria, contains a bluish pigment and chlorophyll A, the key pigment in photosynthesis. Cyanobacteria are found throughout the world, in freshwater, saltwater, and even on land. In fact, cyanobacteria are often the very first species to recolonize the site of a natural disaster, such as a volcanic eruption. Other prokaryotes can perform chemosynthesis and are called chemoautotrophs. Like photoautotrophs, chemoautotrophs make organic carbon molecules from carbon dioxide. Unlike photoautotrophs, however, they do not require light as a source of energy. Instead, they use energy directly from chemical reactions involving ammonia, hydrogen sulfide, nitrites, sulfur, or iron. Some chemoautotrophs live deep in the darkness of the ocean. They obtain energy from hydrogen sulfide gas that flows from hydrothermal vents on the ocean floor. Checkpoint. What are the two groups of autotrophs found in prokaryotes? Releasing energy. Like all organisms, bacteria need a constant supply of energy. This energy is released by the processes of cellular respiration or fermentation, or both. Organisms that require a constant supply of oxygen in order to live are called obligate aerobes. Obligate means the organisms are obliged or required by their life processes to live only in that particular way. Mycobacterium tuberculosis, the bacterium that causes tuberculosis, is an obligate aerobe. Some bacteria, however, do not require oxygen, and in fact may be killed by it. These bacteria are called obligate anaerobes, and they must live in the absence of oxygen. Clostridium botulinum is an obligate anaerobe found in soil. Because of its ability to grow without oxygen, it can grow in canned food that has not been properly sterilized. A third group of bacteria can survive with or without oxygen and are known as facultative anaerobes. Facultative means able to function in different ways depending on their environment. Facultative anaerobes do not require oxygen, but neither are they killed by its presence. Their ability to switch between the processes of cellular respiration and fermentation means that facultative anaerobes are able to live just about anywhere. E. coli is a facultative anaerobe that lives anaerobically in the large intestine and aerobically in sewage or contaminants. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 1. Bacteria. Part 4. Growth and Reproduction. When conditions are favorable, bacteria can grow and divide at astonishing rates. Some divide as often as every 20 minutes. If unlimited space and food were available to a single bacterium, and if all of its offspring divided every 20 minutes, in just 48 hours, they would reach a mass approximately 4,000 times the mass of Earth. Fortunately, this does not happen. In nature, growth is held in check by the availability of food and the production of waste products. Binary fission. When a bacterium has grown so that it has nearly doubled in size, it replicates its DNA and divides in half, producing two identical daughter cells, as in Figure 19.5. This type of reproduction is known as binary fission. Because binary fission does not involve the exchange or recombination of genetic information, it is an asexual form of reproduction. Conjugation. Many bacteria are also able to exchange genetic information by a process called conjugation. During conjugation, a hollow bridge forms between two bacterial cells, as shown in Figure 19.5, and genes move from one cell to the other. This transfer of genetic information increases genetic diversity in populations of bacteria. Spore formation. When growth conditions become unfavorable, many bacteria form structures called spores, the objects that appear red in Figure 19.5. One type of spore, called an endospore, is formed when a bacterium produces a thick internal wall that encloses its DNA and a portion of its cytoplasm. Spores can remain dormant for months or even years while waiting for more favorable growth conditions. When conditions improve, the endospore will germinate and the bacterium will begin to grow again. The ability to form spores makes it possible for some bacteria to survive harsh conditions, such as extreme heat, dryness, or lack of nutrients that might otherwise kill. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 1. Bacteria. Part 5. Importance of Bacteria. You probably remember the principal actors in the last film you saw. You might even recall some of the supporting actors. Have you ever thought that there would be no film at all without the hundreds of workers who are never seen on screen? Bacteria are just like those unseen workers. Bacteria are vital to maintaining the living world. Some are producers that capture energy by photosynthesis. Others are decomposers, breaking down the nutrients in dead matter and the atmosphere. Still other bacteria have human uses. Decomposers. Every living thing depends directly or indirectly on a supply of raw materials. If these materials were lost when an organism died, life could not continue. Before long, plants would drain the soil of minerals and die, and animals that depend on plants for food would starve. As decomposers, bacteria help the ecosystem recycle nutrients, therefore maintaining equilibrium in the environment. When a tree dies, such as the one in Figure 19.6, armies of bacteria attack and digest the dead tissue, breaking it down into simpler materials, which are released into the soil. Other organisms, including insects and fungi, also play important roles in breaking down dead matter. Bacteria also perform critical steps in sewage treatment. Sewage contains human waste, discarded food, and chemical waste. Bacteria break down complex compounds in the sewage into simpler ones. This process produces purified water, nitrogen and carbon dioxide gases, and leftover products that can be used as fertilizers. Nitrogen fixers. Plants and animals depend on bacteria for nitrogen. You may recall that plants need nitrogen to make amino acids, the building blocks of proteins. Nitrogen gas, N2, makes up approximately 80% of Earth's atmosphere. However, plants cannot use nitrogen gas directly. Nitrogen must first be changed chemically to ammonia, NH3, or other nitrogen compounds. Expensive synthetic fertilizers contain these nitrogen compounds, but certain bacteria in the soil produce them naturally. The process of converting nitrogen gas into a form plants can use is known as nitrogen fixation. Nitrogen fixation allows nitrogen atoms to continually cycle through the biosphere. Many plants have symbiotic relationships with nitrogen-fixing bacteria. For example, soybeans and other legumes host the bacterium Rhizobium. Rhizobium grows in nodules, or knobs, on the roots of the soybean plant, as shown in Figure 19.7. The plant provides a source of nutrients for rhizobium, which converts nitrogen in the air into ammonia, helping the plant. Thus, soybeans have their own fertilizer factories in their roots. Human uses of bacteria. Many of the remarkable properties of bacteria provide us with products we depend on every day. For example, bacteria are used in the production of a wide variety of foods and beverages. Bacteria can also be used in industry. One type of bacteria can digest petroleum, making it very helpful in cleaning up small oil spills. Some bacteria remove waste products and poisons from water. Others can even help to mine minerals from the ground. Still others are used to synthesize drugs and chemicals through the techniques of genetic engineering. Our intestines are inhabited by large numbers of bacteria, including E. coli. The term coli was derived from the fact that these bacteria were discovered in the human colon, or large intestine. In the intestines, the bacteria are provided with a warm and safe home, plenty of food, and free transportation. These bacteria also make a number of vitamins that the body cannot produce by itself. So both we and the bacteria benefit from this symbiotic relationship. Biologists continue to discover new uses for bacteria. For example, biotechnology companies have begun to realize that bacteria adapted to extreme environments may be a rich source of heat-stable enzymes. These enzymes can be used in medicine, food production, and industry. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 2. Viruses. Part 1. What is a virus? In 1935, the American biochemist Wendell Stanley obtained crystals of tobacco mosaic virus. Living organisms do not crystallize, so Stanley inferred that viruses were not alive. Viruses are particles of nucleic acid, protein, and in some cases, lipids. Viruses can reproduce only by infecting living cells. Viruses differ widely in terms of size and structure. You can see examples of diverse viruses in Figure 19.9. All viruses have one thing in common. They enter living cells, and once inside, use the machinery of the infected cell to produce more viruses. Most viruses are so small they can be seen only with the aid of a powerful electron microscope. A typical virus is composed of a core of DNA or RNA surrounded by a protein coat. The simplest viruses contain only a few genes, whereas the most complex may have more than 100 genes. A virus's protein coat is called its capsid. The capsid includes proteins that enable a virus to enter a host cell. The capsid proteins of a typical virus bind to receptors on the surface of a cell and trick the cell into allowing it inside. Once inside, the viral genes are expressed. The cell transcribes and translates the viral genetic information into viral capsid proteins. Sometimes that genetic program causes the host cell to make copies of the virus, and in the process, the host cell is destroyed. Because viruses must bind precisely to proteins on the cell surface and then use a host's genetic system, most viruses are highly specific to the cells they infect. Plant viruses infect plant cells. Most animal viruses infect only certain related species of animals, and bacterial viruses infect only certain types of bacteria. Viruses that infect bacteria are called bacteriophages. Checkpoint. What happens when a cell transcribes a viral gene? Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 2. Viruses. Part 2. Viral Infection. Once the virus is inside the host cell, two different processes may occur. Some viruses replicate themselves immediately, killing the host cell. Other viruses replicate themselves in a way that doesn't kill the host cell immediately. These two processes are shown in Figure 19-10. Lytic infection. Bacteriophage T4 is an example of a bacteriophage that causes a lytic infection. In a lytic infection, a virus enters a cell, makes copies of itself, and causes the cell to burst. Bacteriophage T4 has a DNA core inside an intricate protein capsid that is activated by contact with a host cell. It then injects its DNA directly into the cell. The host cell cannot tell the difference between its own DNA and the DNA of the virus. Consequently, the cell begins to make messenger RNA from the genes of the virus. This viral mRNA is translated into viral proteins that act like a molecular wrecking crew, chopping up the cell DNA, a process that shuts down the infected host cell. The virus then uses the materials of the host cell to make thousands of copies of its own DNA molecule. The viral DNA gets assembled into new virus particles. Before long, the infected cell lyses, or bursts, and releases hundreds of virus particles that may go on to infect other cells. Because the host cell is lysed and destroyed, this process is called a lytic infection. In its own way, a lytic virus is similar to an outlaw in the American Old West. First, the outlaw eliminates the town's existing authority, host cell DNA. Then the outlaw demands to be outfitted with new weapons, horses, and riding equipment by terrorizing the local people. using the host cell to make viral proteins and viral DNA. Finally, the outlaw forms a gang that leaves the town to attack new communities. The host cell bursts, releasing hundreds of virus particles. Lysogenic infection. Other viruses, including the bacteriophage Lambda, cause lysogenic infections, in which a host cell makes copies of the virus indefinitely. In a lysogenic infection, a virus integrates its DNA into the DNA of the host cell, and the viral genetic information replicates along with the host cell's DNA. Unlike lytic viruses, lysogenic viruses do not lyse the host cell right away. Instead, a lysogenic virus remains inactive for a period of time. The viral DNA that is embedded in the host's DNA is called a prophage. The prophage may remain part of the DNA of the host cell for many generations before becoming active. A virus may not stay in the prophage form indefinitely. Eventually, any one of a number of factors may activate the DNA of a prophage, which will then remove itself from the host cell DNA and direct the synthesis of new virus particles. The steps of lytic and lysogenic infections may be different from those of other viruses when they attack eukaryotic cells. Most animal viruses, however, show patterns of infection similar to either the lytic or lysogenic patterns of infection of bacteria. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 2. Viruses. Part 3. Retroviruses. Some viruses contain RNA as their genetic information and are called retroviruses. When retroviruses infect a cell, they produce a DNA copy of their RNA. This DNA, much like a prophage, is inserted into the DNA of the host cell. There, the retroviruses may remain dormant for varying lengths of time before becoming active, directing the production of new viruses and causing the death of the host cell. Retroviruses get their name from the fact that their genetic information is copied backward, that is, from RNA to DNA, instead of from DNA to RNA. The prefix retro means backward. Retroviruses are responsible for some types of cancer in animals, including humans. The virus that causes acquired immune deficiency syndrome, AIDS, is a retrovirus. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 2. Viruses. Part 4. Viruses and Living Cells. Viruses must infect a living cell in order to grow and reproduce. They also take advantage of the host's respiration, nutrition, and all the other functions that occur in living things. Therefore, viruses are parasites. A parasite depends entirely upon another living organism for its existence, harming that organism in the process. Are viruses alive? If we require that living things be made up of cells and be able to live independently, then viruses are not alive. Yet viruses have many of the characteristics of living things. After infecting living cells, viruses can reproduce, regulate gene expression, and even evolve. Some of the main differences between cells and viruses are summarized in Figure 19.11. Viruses are at the borderline of living and non-living things. Although viruses are smaller and simpler than the smallest cells, it is not likely that they could have been the first living things. Because viruses are completely dependent upon living things, it seems more likely that viruses developed after living cells. In fact, the first viruses may have evolved from the genetic material of living cells. Once established, however, viruses have continued to evolve, along with the cells they infect, over billions of years. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Should mass vaccinations be required? Smallpox is a deadly disease that produces pustules. Smallpox had been brought under control by a worldwide vaccination program. It appeared that vaccination had eradicated every trace of smallpox in nature. As a result, the routine vaccination of children against smallpox was ended in the United States in 1971. No new smallpox cases have been reported anywhere since 1978. Only two laboratories, one in Atlanta, Georgia, and the other in Russia, are known to have samples of the virus. Today, there is concern that certain infectious diseases, such as smallpox, will be used as a biological weapon. This has led authorities in the United States and other countries to order the production of new stocks of certain vaccines. Preparing millions of doses of a vaccine as a precaution against attack certainly seems like a good idea, but it also raises an important social and scientific question. Should a nation require its citizens to be vaccinated against a particular disease, or should we wait until there is evidence of an outbreak of a disease in a given area? The viewpoints. Require vaccinations. Human history shows just how deadly certain infectious diseases can be. Therefore, it makes sense to preempt an outbreak by requiring vaccinations as soon as enough doses of the vaccine are available. The benefits of immunity would outweigh any possible adverse reactions to the vaccine. In addition, it is cheaper to vaccinate everyone rather than to treat infectious diseases on an individual basis. Hold the vaccine in reserve. As serious as the threat from certain infectious diseases may be, we should keep in mind the rule of medicine that is taught to all doctors. First, do no harm. We already know, unfortunately, that administering vaccines to an entire population will indeed do harm. For example, U.S. health statistics show that for every 1 million infants vaccinated for smallpox, as many as 5 may have died from reactions to the vaccine. The exact number of deaths that will result from a nationwide vaccination program is not certain, but any number of deaths is too many when the risk of infection is only hypothetical. Research and decide. 1. Analyzing the viewpoints. To make an informed decision, learn more about this issue by consulting library or internet resources. Then, list both the risks and benefits of nationwide vaccination. 2. Forming your opinion. How do you balance the risks and benefits of vaccination now against the risks and benefits of stockpiling the vaccine? What factors should you consider? 3. Role playing. You are a researcher for the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. You have been offered the chance to be inoculated with a vaccine such as smallpox. Would you get the vaccination? Explain your answer and support it with facts from your research. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 3. Diseases Caused by Bacteria and Viruses. Part 1. Bacterial disease in humans. Many bacteria live on and within our bodies, and some bacteria even help us to perform essential functions, such as digesting our food. The growth of pathogenic bacteria, on the other hand, disrupts the body's equilibrium by interfering with its normal activities and producing disease. The French chemist Louis Pasteur, shown in Figure 19-12, was the first person to show convincingly that bacteria cause disease. Pasteur helped to establish what has become known as the germ theory of disease when he showed that bacteria were responsible for a number of human and animal diseases. Bacteria produce disease in one of two general ways. Some bacteria damage the cells and tissues of the infected organism directly by breaking down the cells for food. Other bacteria release toxins, poisons, that travel throughout the body, interfering with the normal activity of the host. Using cells for food. The bacterium Mycobacterium tuberculosis, which causes tuberculosis, is inhaled into the lungs, where it destroys the lung tissue. The bacterium also may enter a blood vessel and travel to new sites in the body, where it destroys more tissue. Releasing toxins. Bacterial toxins can travel throughout the body. For example, the Streptococcus bacterium that causes strep throat can release toxins into the bloodstream. These toxins can cause scarlet fever. A red rash appears on the skin of someone infected with scarlet fever. Diphtheria, another disease caused by the Corynebacterium diphtheriae bacterium, infects the tissues of the throat. C. diphtheriae releases toxins into the bloodstream, where they destroy tissues. Diphtheria can lead to breathing problems, heart failure, paralysis, and death. Preventing bacterial disease. Figure 19.13 shows some common bacterial diseases, the pathogens that cause them, and their effects on the body. Many bacterial diseases can be prevented by stimulating the body's immune system with vaccines. A vaccine is a preparation of weakened or killed pathogens. When injected into the body, a vaccine sometimes prompts the body to produce immunity to the disease. Immunity is the body's ability to destroy new pathogens. You will learn more about immunity in Chapter 40. If a bacterial infection does occur, a number of drugs can be used to attack and destroy the invading bacteria. These drugs include antibiotics, such as penicillin and tetracycline. Antibiotics are compounds that block the growth and reproduction of bacteria. They can be used to cure many bacterial diseases. One of the major reasons for the dramatic increase in human life expectancy during the past two centuries is an increased understanding of how to prevent and cure bacterial infections. Checkpoint. What is the effect of antibiotics on bacteria? Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 3. Diseases Caused by Bacteria and Viruses. Part 3. Controlling Bacteria. Although most bacteria are harmless and many are beneficial, the risks of bacterial infection are great enough to warrant efforts to control bacterial growth. There are various methods used to control bacterial growth, including sterilization, disinfectants, and food processing. Sterilization by heat. One method used to control the growth of potentially dangerous bacteria is sterilization. Sterilization destroys all bacteria by subjecting them to great heat. Most bacteria cannot survive high temperatures for a long time, so most can be killed by exposure to high heat. Disinfectants. Another method of controlling bacteria is by using disinfectants, chemical solutions that kill pathogenic bacteria. Disinfectants are used in the home to clean bathrooms, kitchens, and other rooms where bacteria may flourish. Today, some manufacturers of soaps, cleansers, and even kitchen utensils have added antibacterial chemicals to their products. Many scientists are concerned, however, about the overuse of these chemicals. If you wash your hands properly, ordinary soaps do a good job of removing bacteria. Overuse of antibacterial compounds increases the likelihood that common bacteria will eventually evolve to become resistant to them, and therefore much more dangerous and difficult to kill. Food storage and processing. As you read earlier, bacteria can cause food to spoil. One method of stopping food from spoiling is storing it in a refrigerator. Food that is stored at a low temperature will stay fresh longer because the bacteria will take much longer to multiply. In addition, boiling, frying, or steaming can sterilize many kinds of food. Each of these cooking techniques raises the temperature of the food to a point where the bacteria are killed. If food is to be preserved for a long time, a method called canning is sometimes used. The food is heated to a high temperature. It then must be immediately placed into sterile glass jars or metal cans and sealed. Food that has been properly canned will last almost indefinitely. Finally, a number of chemical treatments will inhibit the growth of bacteria in food. These include treating food with everyday chemicals such as salt, vinegar, or sugar. Salted meat, pickled vegetables, and jam are examples of chemically preserved food. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 3. Diseases Caused by Bacteria and Viruses. Part 4. Viral Disease in Humans. Like bacteria, viruses produce disease by disrupting the body's normal equilibrium. In many viral infections, viruses attack and destroy certain cells in the body, causing the symptoms of the disease. Poliovirus infects and kills cells of the nervous system, producing paralysis. Other viruses cause infected cells to change their patterns of growth and development. Human papillomavirus, for example, infects cells in the outermost layer of the skin, producing an abnormal growth known as a wart. Some common diseases caused by viruses are listed in Figure 19-14. Unlike bacterial diseases, viral diseases cannot be treated with antibiotics. The best way to protect against most viral diseases lies in prevention, often by the use of vaccines. Several decades of childhood vaccination against smallpox, a terrible viral disease that once killed millions, have virtually eliminated this disease. Most vaccines provide protection only if they are used before an infection begins. Once a viral disease has been contracted, it may be too late to control the infection. However, sometimes the symptoms of the infection can be treated. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 3. Diseases Caused by Bacteria and Viruses. Part 5. Viral Disease in Animals. Viruses produce serious animal diseases as well. An epidemic of foot-and-mouth disease, caused by a virus that infects livestock, swept through parts of Europe in the late 1990s. Thousands of cattle were destroyed in efforts to control the disease. American authorities took special precautions to guard against the spread of the foot-and-mouth virus to North America. Some animal viruses can even cause cancer. An example of these oncogenic or tumor-causing viruses is the Rous sarcoma virus, which infects chickens. Scientists have learned a great deal about cancer by studying the genes of these oncogenic viruses, which disrupt normal controls over cell growth and division. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 3. Diseases Caused by Bacteria and Viruses. Part 6. Viral Disease in Plants. Many viruses, including tobacco mosaic virus, infect plants. These viruses pose a serious threat to many agricultural crops. Farmers in many countries, including the United States, struggle to control them. Like other viruses, plant viruses contain a core of nucleic acid and a protein coat. Unlike animal viruses, most plant viruses have a difficult time entering the cells they infect. This is partly because plant cells are surrounded by tough cell walls that viruses alone cannot break through. As a result, most plant viruses are adapted to take advantage of breaks in the cell wall caused by even minor damage to plant tissues. Viruses can enter through tears in leaf tissue, breaks in stems or roots, or simply through microscopic cell wall damage caused by human or animal contact with the plant. Many plant viruses are spread by insects. The feeding action of an insect pest often provides a perfect opportunity for viral infections to spread. Potato yellow dwarf virus is spread by an insect known as the leafhopper. Leafhoppers feed on potato leaves, and they also carry the virus in their tissues. As leafhoppers move from plant to plant, they spread the infection, threatening an entire crop if they are not controlled. Once inside the plant, many viruses spread rapidly, causing severe tissue damage, mottled leaves, and wilting, and sometimes killing the infected plant, as shown in Figure 19-15. Plant viruses infect many valuable fruit trees, including apples and peaches, and have caused serious losses in the potato crop. Chapter 19. Bacteria and Viruses. Section 3. Diseases caused by bacteria and viruses. Part 7. Viroids and prions. Scientists have discovered two other virus-like particles that also cause disease: viroids and prions. Viroids cause disease in plants. Prions cause disease in animals. Viroids. Many plants, including potatoes, tomatoes, apples, and citrus fruits, can be infected by viroids. Viroids are single-stranded RNA molecules that have no surrounding capsids. It is believed that viroids enter an infected cell and direct the synthesis of new viroids. The viroids then disrupt the metabolism of the plant cell and stunt the growth of the entire plant. Prions. In 1972, American Stanley Prusiner became interested in scrapie, an infectious disease in sheep for which the exact cause was unknown. Although he first suspected a virus, experiments suggested the disease might actually be caused by tiny particles found in the brains of infected sheep. Unlike viruses, these particles contained no DNA or RNA, only protein. Prusiner called these particles prions, short for protein infectious particles. Although prions were first discovered in sheep, many animals, including humans, can become infected with prions. There is some evidence that prions cause disease by forming protein clumps. These clumps induce normal protein molecules to become prions. Eventually, there are so many prions in the nerve tissue that cells become damaged. There is strong evidence that mad cow disease and Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, a similar disease in humans, may be caused by prions.